We're going duck and goose hunting on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Glad you could join us. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in the marsh as the opener for morning dove, early teal, and early Canada goose hunting season is underway. I can just see the teal in my mind's eye, the duck with a greenish band taking flight. You see it on the wing more prominently when they're in flight. Are you a goose or duck hunter? What do you love about the sport? And where do you hunt? What decoys do you use? We're at 800-642-1234. Bruce Ross is executive director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. He's been a waterfowl hunter for 35 years. In 2018, he was named Conservationist of the Year by Wisconsin Ducks Unlimited in recognition of his volunteerism. Bruce, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, you served in the Coast Guard for decades. How did you get started in hunting ducks and geese?
Well, as you said, I've been hunting for 35 years, so I started back when I was in my 20s. A friend of mine who had graduated from the Coast Guard Academy with me got me interested. I didn't grow up in a hunting family, but he did. He was an outdoorsman and decided to take me out duck hunting one day, and it kind of got under my skin. And even though the Coast Guard moved me around every 2 to 3 years to different locations around the country, that was something I could carry with me and find places to hunt ducks or geese wherever they sent me.
Where were some of your favorite spots that you discovered when you were in the Coast Guard?
Well, I love duck hunting in a marsh. I just love all the sounds and sights of a marsh. But I was in Connecticut hunting geese and ducks in Long Island Sound, Virginia, along the Potomac and down into Chesapeake Bay. But I really loved Wisconsin. I'm not originally from Wisconsin, but I loved all the outdoor activities here in Wisconsin, including duck hunting. And this is where I chose to retire when I left the Coast Guard.
I'm wondering, do you see differences between duck hunting in northern Wisconsin versus the spots for duck hunting in the southern part of our state?
Sure. Well, there's more open marsh probably in the southern parts of the state, and mm-hmm. certainly more open fields. So with all the agriculture in the southern part of the state, geese like to congregate and on fields that have just been harvested, and so there may be a lot more of open field hunting for geese in the southern part of the state. Up north, there's a lot of lakes. Wood ducks like the woods surrounding lakes. You have a lot of diver duck activity in the northern part of the state. So, yeah, there's different species. There's a different way that you might approach the hunt. There may be a little bit different heritage associated with each part of the state.
Well, here we are in early teal duck and goose season, which opened this week. How do people hunt geese and duck, and what are characteristics are there in the early season?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about what are the basic patterns of duck or goose hunting, and all of them kind of follow the same pattern, whether you're hunting for a teal or a mallard or a wood duck or a goose. They're all going to follow this same sort of pattern, and it kind of runs through the location. You have to have decoys. You have to conceal yourself from the approaching birds. You have to talk to them and convince them it's a good place to go, and you have to close the deal. So let's talk about each one of those. So if location, you really want to be where the ducks really want to be. So that might involve some scouting. So you're going to go find a location where there's a gathering geese in a field or where teal like to hang out. If you find that location, you're going to get out there at a time when the ducks or geese are going to want to be there. So if you're going out into a lake or a marsh, you're going to have to paddle out, or you're going to have to motor out into the marsh to that location. When you get out there, you're going to set up some decoys, and decoys are simply a doppelganger. They look like the species that you're hunting. They float on the water, or they stand on the ground. And what you'll want to try to do is mimic the natural family groupings of the waterfowl. And that's called your spread of decoys or your rig. Once you've done that, you're going to want to hide from any approaching birds. So you're going to go into concealment. And that could be as simple as just pulling some marsh grass around you or over top of your boat. Or it may be a more substantial structure. If it's your property, it might be a large semi-permanent wooden structure that's permanently grassed up. It has seats for the hunters, a place for the dog. Some of them even have
fully appointed.
Yeah, duly appointed. Some of them have stoves, so for those chilly mornings in the late season, or some of them actually you can cook some breakfast on if you're so inclined. So, I mean, those are the more palatial blinds, but mm-hmm. Most of them are pretty simplistic. I hunt out of a skiff for the most part. My blind is just a pop-up blind, it's called. So it's a metal structure that goes up or down. It has on it some grass, and I can tuck away behind the grass and pull that up, and I'll be pretty hidden from the ducks.
I just want to pause here to reintroduce you. Bruce Ross is a longtime waterfowl hunter who is executive director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. He's our guide in the fields and marsh as we talk about hunting season. Are you a goose or duck hunter? What do you love about the sport? What conservation efforts are you involved in? And where do you go to hunt? We're at 800-642-1234. Bruce, so you were getting close to the close here and what that involves to actually get the duck. Can you take us there?
Sure. So you're sitting in your blind, you're looking up at the sky, you're looking for anything that might resemble a duck, and when you see them, you try to identify them, and because there's different species of ducks that might be available through the course of the season, and that makes a difference in how you talk to them. So you've got a call in your hand, and a call is simply an instrument to talk to the ducks. And so you talk to them, you give them the right call, and hopefully they're attracted to your location, and they circle around, and hopefully you get them to come in.
You know, what are some of the practices around baiting? What are the do's and don'ts? What's illegal in baiting birds, and what is okay to do?
Yeah, first of all, it's illegal to bait for migratory waterfowl. So if you're in a field that has some waste grain in it, normal agricultural practices, that may be okay. That is okay. But if you've collected corn or soybeans and spread them out in the field in order to attract and hold waterfowl, that's illegal. That's a federal offense.
So when you talk about blinds, and what are the different types of blinds? Can you explain how they're used?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, they could be very substantial structures. So if it's on your property, you might build a blind in a good location for duck or goose hunting. It might be a 10-foot by 10-foot structure that has brush or grasses attached to it each season, so that it's hidden from the decoys. And it may have some nice accoutrement inside, or a simple. For example, if you're going field hunting for geese, they will use goose hunters will use a field layout blind, and just picture a camouflage sleeping bag that you climb in, and it allows you to be tucked in with the decoys and more where the geese might want to land.
We're talking with the head of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Bruce Ross is our guide to the marsh as the season for mourning dove, early teal, and early Canada goose is underway. We'll get back with him in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're duck hunting on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So I lived in Louisiana near the Arkansas border for years, and I can tell you that duck hunting season is sacred. Louisiana's motto on its license plates is sportsman's paradise, and I can believe it with duck hunting season. But up here on the Mississippi River, we get a tremendous flight of ducks. Of course, we have thousands of lakes and ponds, all great opportunities. What traditions do you have with duck hunting? How are you getting the next generation educated and interested in waterfowl hunting opportunities? Join in at 800-642-1234. Bruce Ross has been hunting ducks and geese for 35 years. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, and he's our guide. So, Bruce, how do you determine where to put the blinds and whether you need to move them around to different spots?
Well, it depends on where the birds are telling you they want to be. So most waterfowlers will go out and they'll scout an area. So even if you're in a marsh where the ducks want to be, where in the marsh do the ducks want to be? So you go out and you'll scout. You'll see where ducks are landing. And that might be a good location where you set up. Or you'll drive around. If you're goose hunting, you'll be looking for the fields, the farmers' fields that are being actively used by ducks the day before you want to go hunting. And you'll solicit permission from the farmer. And if he says yes, then you might go out and hunt where those birds are landing. So it all depends on where the birds want to be. That's where you want to be.
Tell us about the calls. How critical is it for a call to lure the bird?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of duck hunting. A call is it's really the they would be the woodwinds of an orchestra. So if the your listeners could see me now, I'd be holding a 4-inch plastic tube that has a reed in it that when I blow through it, it vibrates. And if I manipulate it right, I can sound like a duck or I can sound like a goose. And if I talk to the ducks or the geese right, it'll give them some confidence that where I'm at is where they want to be.
Well, let's hear one of those calls from this year's Wisconsin Waterfowl Association's Duck and Goose Calling Championships. Here is Troy Mazur imitating some geese. So what do you like about Troy's call there?
Well, he sounds like more than one goose, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah. And so that's confidence instilling to geese that might be circling overhead. He's got single clucks in there. He's got double clucks in there. He's got a little bit of a moan in the background. So all of those calls mean something to geese, do them for a reason. So they mean something to the geese. And again, it gives them confidence that the decoys that are imitating them down on the ground are their kin, and maybe they want to land there.
How much practice does this take to perfect a call?
Well, you can spend a lot of time at it, and those championship callers like Troy probably spend a full season working on their routines. They go through, in competition calling, they go through a minute and a half of a series of calls from a landing call all the way back to a comeback call if you might use in the field. So it takes years of practice.
We're talking with Bruce Ross, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. We're talking about the season. Early season is underway. Taking your questions and your experiences, your remembrances of duck hunting when you were a child or how you go duck hunting today, where do you go? Join in at 800-642-1234. I want to hear another call. This is Mason Tate's winning duck call in the state duck and goose calling championships. All right, so that is a different call than Troy's call. Do we know what these sounds are communicating, Bruce?
Yeah, he is again trying to communicate. There's a bunch of ducks in his location, so he's saying that there's some food here. There's something called the feeding chuckle that was in there. And that's a bunch of ducks that are content and feeding. One or two calls in there is the lonely hen quack. So that's just a you know, I'm lonely. Why don't you come down here and be with me? And again, some of them are the comeback call. So trying to, perhaps the birds have circled overhead. They haven't seen exactly what they want to see and has started flying away. So you give them a comeback call, and maybe they'll be interested enough to come back and give it a second look.
Well, Bruce, I'm wondering what gear you use that is indispensable. I was, kind of looking at gear yesterday. I saw some marsh skis. These have these long skis on to get through a marsh. Have you tried those?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I actually have a set in my garage that were donated to us by a long time ago duck hunter. Those were used to get you out into the marsh. They displaced, like on snow, they displaced your weight over a larger area so you could get out into the deeper into the marsh. They're heavy, they're awkward, and frankly don't get used very much except by, you know, just a few folks who were like into the heritage of duck or goose hunting. So no, they're not used, and I haven't used them.
What kind of gear is really important for you as you pack up and go out hunting?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about decoys. A decoy is simply a way to give a visual impression to the ducks or to the geese that this is a good area to be. So it's important to have the right species of decoy. It's important to place them in the right location. We talked about a call. That would be important to closing the deal. But you can't close the deal. And if the person who introduced me to duck hunting would say, you need a shotgun, shells, and a license, but everything else is extra. So if to duck hunt, to goose hunt, you have to have those three things. But if you have a decoy or decoys or a call, that makes the deal a little bit better. And for me, as you said, I was in the Coast Guard for a long time. I'm a waterman. I enjoy being out in the water, in the marsh. I built a homemade skiff, and I hunt out of that in the middle of the state most of the year.
What are some things about licenses that we should know about?
Yeah. So ducks and geese are a federally protected species. They're managed federally. In fact, they're managed internationally. So you need a federal permission. That's obtained by buying a federal water stamp. That's a $25 stamp that you put on the back of your hunting license. So you also have to have a small game license from the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin also has a waterfowl stamp. So you need a waterfowl stamp. That's a $7 stamp that you also put on the back of your license. And each one of these stamps, by the way, are they're pieces of art. They're little pieces of art. Every year it's a different stamp. There's a competition by artists to get on that stamp. But you need at least those three things from a license perspective.
And how do you display your license? Is this a virtual thing that you have on your phone, or do you actually have a card?
Well, I carry a card. You have to carry that stamp. You have to actually sign across the face of each of those stamps to indicate it's yours, and you put them on the back of your license. The Wisconsin stamp is virtual now, so you can have that printed out on your license, but you should be carrying your license. I guess nowadays with the Go Wild card, that substitutes for a license, and it may substitute for your state waterfowl stamp, but not for your federal waterfowl stamp.
Are you still hunting with the same shotgun you've used for years? Do you trade them out? What are you using?
Yeah, no, my first waterfowl shotgun was a very basic, and if your listeners are shotgun users, they'll know the Remington 870 Wingmaster was a pump shotgun, very basic, very inexpensive, cost me $150. And now, of course, I've upgraded, you know, several times through the years. I happen to be using a Benelli shotgun, a Super Vinci, it's called. But it still does the same thing. It's just a fancier version of it.
Do you have preferences when you go out hunting as to which one you'll use?
If I'm waterfowl hunting, I'll use a 12-gauge shotgun, and that's the one I just described. It provides enough power and enough knockdown pellets to bring a duck or a goose down. The shells I use may be a little bit different depending on what species I'm hunting. So if I'm hunting for teal, I'm going to use a shell that throws smaller BBs. And if I'm hunting for geese, I'm going to use something that packs a little bit more of a punch.
Bruce Ross heads up the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. A shout out to Horicon Marsh Wildlife Area in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties, where waterfowl hunting is allowed on the state-owned land. According to the DNR, hunters will see improved opportunities through the state due to some changes made for the 2020 and 2021 seasons. Are you a goose or duck hunter? What do you love about the sport? Where do you hunt? What can you tell us about your hunting dog? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more Wisconsin Weekend right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up, we've made some changes to keep you informed and connected here in Wisconsin and around the world. You'll find both 1A and On Point at new times and a few other new shows, other changes as well. Take a listen. Let us know what you think. You can find all the details at WPR.org/fall2020. Right now, early goose season is underway, and Wisconsin's resident goose population continues to increase. This fall, according to the DNR, our state's roughly 47,000 goose hunters can expect another strong season with excellent hunting opportunities. What do you enjoy about waterfowl hunting? What is it like on the marsh at sunrise? Share your experiences, 800-642-1234. And Bruce Ross, the head of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, stays with us. Let's take a call now. Mo is joining us from Oconto this morning. Hi, Mo.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What I have to talk about is the Wisconsin State Dog. It's kind of a rare breed, but it's a fantastic little dog. It's about Springer Spaniel size, and it has a curly coat. It's pretty waterproof, and it's called the American Water Spaniel.
And I understand, Mo, that the American Water Spaniel is one of only 5 dog breeds developed here in the U.S. and only one that originated in Wisconsin.
That's correct.
Well,
Pfeiffer down in New London, but if somebody wants a great upland dog, probably the best nose that I've ever seen on a dog, and a nice duck dog for small skiffs and things like that, it's fantastic. I tell people it's almost like cheating when you have one of these dogs.
Mo, where do you go hunting?
Oconto County, mm-hmm. Forest County up there, do a lot of mainly upland. But I've hunted ducks on Green Bay, and it is really fun, especially this time of year when it's still fairly warm out and you get a nice sun kind of warming you up in the morning.
Yeah. Bruce, do you hunt with a dog?
Yeah, I do. In fact, when we were playing the recordings of the duck calling, one of my dogs came over and started nuzzling around my knee trying to figure out what was going on. So that's Callie. She's a black lab.
No, Callie, it's only radio. Don't get too excited.
Yeah, but as Mo was saying, I mean, these dogs are really, excited about performing their job for us. And so it's funny that Mo should bring up American Water Spaniels. I've hunted over a couple of them myself, mostly for grouse hunting. They are great dogs. My wife is in love with them, and I think that may be one of our next dogs.
What it goes into the training of these dogs, getting them ready to go hunting?
Yeah, so they're bred to be strong swimmers. They have a natural instinct to return items to their masters. They're very smart. They're very trainable. But that's the key. You have to train them. So if you want a well-behaved dog sitting in your blind or doing what you want it to do to retrieve the duck to you, you have to spend some time off season. So my wife, Pam, will spend, 10 to 15 minutes in the yard with the dog just about every day doing some basic retrieves or some basic obedience work. But just imagine what you might want a dog to do out in the marsh. You want to send the dog to be able to paddle through the decoys, locate the dead bird, bring it back in its mouth without puncturing the meat. But, you know, what happens if it doesn't see the bird fall? You have to send it in the right direction. It has to take a straight line to the unseen bird. What happens if it starts out in the right direction, but it veers off course? You have to be able to correct it mid-course. And let's say you've dropped two birds. You've been fortunate enough to drop two birds. One of them might be swimming away. So you want to be able to direct the dog past the dead bird to the one that's swimming away so that you can, in fact, harvest it and enjoy it on the table.
This gets really technical pretty quickly for these dogs. How trainable are they?
Oh, it's pretty amazing. So if you're really into dog training, you might compete your dog against other dogs or against the standards for a junior or a senior or a master hunter title. So you can spend years working your way through the progression of training and qualifications to earn those titles.
Are there differences between using, say, the American Water Spaniel, as we were talking about, versus training a retriever?
Yeah, well, no, the American Water Spaniel is a retriever.
Is a retriever, okay.
So yes, it's a spaniel, but it's a retriever, too. It's intended to retrieve the bird that you shot. Both dogs, retrievers, like Labrador retrievers or Chesapeake Bay retrievers and spaniels, can be used on upland game as well. So if you're hunting pheasant or you're hunting grouse, they've got a nose. If they're, you know, controllable, then you know they're going to find a bird for you.
We're talking hunting with Bruce Ross. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association and a duck and goose hunter. Do you hunt with a retriever or a bird dog? How long did it take you to train your dog? How did it change your relationship with your dog? Join in at 800-642-1234. Bruce, do you find that you have a different relationship with Callie, with your dog, since you do go out hunting?
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough not to love a Labrador just for being a Labrador. But when you see them doing what they were bred to do and what they've been trained to do and how excited they are, I put on camouflage or I pick up my gun and she is just ready to go. She's spinning around in circles and running out to the truck and saying, "Come on, Dad, let's get going." So it adds another dimension to your relationship with the dog, no doubt.
How often do you get out hunting?
Yeah, it's a 60-day season. The regular season is 60 days long, and I'm lucky if I get out 25 to 30 days a year. I hope, you know, I was hoping actually with this position that I would get out more, but last year that didn't quite work out. We had all sorts of events and other commitments, but at 25 or 30 days a year, you may be pretty tired at the end of the season.
We haven't talked yet about how to cook these birds, and I understand that you have some kind of delicious ways that you prepare the birds. What do you do?
Yeah, well, I can't claim to be a haute cuisine chef, but wild game like duck and geese, you know, has a different flavor. They need to be prepared differently. They are the result, the pleasure, the conclusion of the hunt. And so, first, different birds have different value as table fare. So they tend to take on the flavors of what they eat. So grain-eating birds like mallards or pintails or teal or Canada geese have a milder taste than, say, diving ducks like bluebill or ringneck that might eat clams or mussels. So generally speaking, I prefer to hunt those grain-eating birds. So just continuing, there's, you know, they're wild game animals. They must be, you know, they got to be cleaned, they've got to be gutted, and otherwise prepared before even coming into the kitchen. You have to pluck the feathers and remove the down, get rid of the entrails. I tend to leave the skin on my ducks, but I will tend to breast them out. So there's a lot of work that goes into plucking and not a lot of meat that results. So my tip number one would be, even though they're called waterfowl, unlike domesticated fowl, the meat from ducks and geese, it's a dark red and generally doesn't have a lot of fat. So that provides some insight on how to prepare them for the table. Don't overcook them, or you'll end up with some dry, livery, unpalatable fare.
Yeah, it'll be really tough, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it brings out the worst flavor in the bird. So really, you want them medium rare. I mean, that sounds weird, but you want them red at a minimum pink and juicy. So if you're grilling them, just be 10 to 15 minutes is about all you want to cook it.
Do you marinate at all?
Yeah, I do. I think that's really important. So tip number two would be you don't have to get real fancy, but marinade is important. The easiest, and this is the way I might, if I shoot a teal tomorrow, I might come home and eat the breast that night. So I'll slice the meat into finger-sized strips. I'll throw them along with a cup of teriyaki sauce into a plastic bag, let them marinate for maybe a couple of hours. Then I'll throw them on a super hot grill and, again, cook them till they're medium rare. Not very long at all. Porter beer is a great combination with that.
You also, speaking of beer, you make a crock pot goose with a bottle of beer?
Yeah, well, this is another easy thing, and it doesn't take a lot of energy. It takes a little bit of time, but here again, the legs or the bread, you might hear Callie in the background. She's snuffling up to me again.
Now she's getting hungry.
Yeah, right. So you can breast out a goose and put it in a crock pot, pour a can of beer, of your favorite beer, in there. Try to stay away from the hoppy versions, and let that cook away at a low heat through the day. When you come home from work or at the end of the day, just take the meat out, drain it, pull it apart, much like pulled pork, and mix it up with some barbecue sauce, put it on a sandwich bun, put some coleslaw on top, and you've got a barbecue sandwich. And it's just delicious.
Have you ever experimented with goose sausage?
Yeah, and that's probably the easiest way to enjoy the fruits of your field labor. Find a local butcher who handles game rendering and tell him you want some goose sausage. So that's a great way to introduce your friends to goose, and it lasts a long time, and it's a great appetizer, and it gets mixed in with pork and other spices, and it's really quite good.
Bruce Ross is with us, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. Still time to share your waterfowl hunting traditions, your recipes, your calls, your scouting reports. That number is 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Bruce Ross right here on the Ideas Network. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with veteran duck and goose hunter Bruce Ross. He heads up the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. The DNR expects another great season for duck hunting in its migratory fall forecast. The North Duck Zone opens 1 week earlier than last year to give more opportunity for northern hunters before winter sets in. So, Bruce, let's talk about what the association is involved in conservation efforts. What is the association doing on that front?
Yeah, before we get to that, maybe I could talk a little bit about, your listeners may be familiar with some bird numbers, a study that just came out about bird numbers in the last 50 years. And it's a shocking tale that we have, as a North American continent, lost 3 billion birds in virtually every category from songbirds to raptors and owls, swallows, everything except waterfowl, which are up an astounding 56%, I think the number is. So, I mean, that's sort of counterintuitive, isn't it? A hunting species that is bucking the trend.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, the big reason is that hunters and fishermen fund conservation in this country. So we care about the species that bring us such joy in the field, and we put our money where our mouth is. So every year since 1934, we talked about the federal waterfowl stamp. Every waterfowler has to buy one. That goes directly towards habitat. If you're a Wisconsin waterfowler, you have to buy a state waterfowl stamp. That goes directly to habitat. And so, that, of course, that's in addition to your hunting license. So money is important. Habitat management, restoration is important. And that's what is producing the ducks and the geese that are bucking that national bird decline.
Well, let's take another call. Tom is joining us from Mequon. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've had like a large pot pie with cooked goose meat in it at a restaurant called Fox and Hounds. This is before they changed ownership about 10 years ago, and it was the most delicious pot pie. It was probably a foot across or so and maybe 6 inches deep. That was the whole meal, this nice buttery top, you know, flaky and stuff like that. But that meat was just so delicious in there, I have to say.
Was it your first introduction to goose in a pot pie?
Well, that's the only place I've ever seen it or, you know, tasted it. I wish I could get it again.
Bruce, have you tried goose in a pot pie?
Yeah, I have. I have had it. I haven't cooked it myself, and it's delicious. I think there's a lot of ways to prepare this. The French are really great at finding some innovative ways to cook fowl. And let me recommend a book to our listeners. It's called Duck, Duck, Goose. That'll stick in your head. Duck, Duck, Goose by Hank Shaw. And he'll help you with everything from breaking down your bird to, you know, how to turn it into a meal that you'll remember.
Yeah, so Tom, maybe you can try it at home if you could.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. So going back to the stamps, I understand that the association has been lobbying the state to increase the fee for waterfowl hunting.
Yeah, there's a natural progression for waterfowlers. I think when you first get out there, you want to pull the trigger, you want to collect game, and you morph into a naturalist. You want to understand the environment. You understand more about the bird. And then eventually I think you come to being a conservationist, you know, having appreciated what waterfowling has done in your life and the value it brings not only your waterfowling community, but your regular community. You want to make sure that future generations receive those same benefits. So back to that Wisconsin duck stamp, that started in 1978. The last time it was increased was 1997. So we pay $7 and have since 1997. Think about the things that you bought for a dollar back in 1997. How much would that cost you today? And so the habitat work that we think is important to the future of waterfowling just is not able to be done at the same level as required just because of inflation. So we've been lobbying for the past 10 years, crazy, isn't it? 10 years to increase the waterfowl stamp so that we can pay more to enjoy waterfowling.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And I hope you have a great season.
Thank you. And if you want to get out, you should reach out to me and you can experience it yourself.
Bruce Ross is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. He's been a duck and goose hunter for 35 years. And we have a link, by the way, to the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association. You can go to wpr.org/mornings. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher with a controversial history surrounding the ice cream sundae.
Wisconsin is the home to many firsts. The first blender, the first typewriter, and even malted milk was developed and introduced to the world right here in the Dairy State. Two Rivers is the home of the first ever ice cream sundae. Well, that last one is debated by some. Dean Robbins explains.
I like driving across Wisconsin to see legendary historical sites. I've planned whole trips around the Eau Claire baseball field where Hank Aaron got his start and the Janesville house where Abraham Lincoln spent the night. But every once in a while, I stumble across a bit of Wisconsin history I knew nothing about. That happened on a recent drive through the northeast part of the state when I pulled into Two Rivers. In Central Park, I noticed an official Wisconsin historical marker claiming it as the birthplace of the ice cream sundae. Coincidentally, my favorite dessert. Could such a major phenomenon have originated in this small town? According to the marker, a local man named George Hallauer walked into a soda fountain on 15th Street in 1881. He asked owner Edward Berner to top a dish of ice cream with chocolate sauce, a substance previously reserved for ice cream sodas. The new concoction caught on, and Berner began selling it for a nickel, but only on Sundays. Enter a 10-year-old girl who insisted on having a dish of ice cream with that stuff on top on a different day of the week. That was out of the question for Berner, until the girl charmingly suggested that they pretend it was Sunday. That opened the floodgates, with the shopkeeper offering the dish every day in many flavors. The unusual spelling of Sunday started when a salesman placed an order for Berner's canoe-shaped dishes with his glassware company. He requested Sunday dishes with an E at the end rather than a Y, and the rest is history, or so says the state of Wisconsin. Is this amazing story for real? Standing there in Central Park, I searched for Ice Cream Sunday Origin on my phone. Sure enough, Two Rivers has rivals to the claim. The most aggressive challenger is Ithaca, New York, which points to a 19th-century newspaper ad for a locally served sundae. In a New York Times article on the dispute, Ithaca's mayor sneered at Two Rivers, saying, "We have the historical documents, and they don't." Two Rivers refused to take that lying down. The city passed a resolution demanding that Ithaca cease and desist with its sundae slanders. Residents also deluged Ithaca's mayor with postcards picturing the Wisconsin historical marker. On matters of milk fat, Ithaca surely learned that you crossed the dairy state at your peril. So what's the truth? To gather crucial evidence, I strolled to the Two Rivers Visitor Center in an 1850s inn. You can bet the complex houses a soda fountain, named after local hero Edward Berner. Purely for the sake of historical research, I ordered an ice cream sundae. Was it a descendant of the world's first sundae, served here in 1881? Sorry, Ithaca, but I have no documentation. All I'll say is that, with its thick chocolate sauce, overflowing whipped cream, and juicy cherry, the dish made me a believer.
Dean Robbins is a journalist and author based in Madison. He's won state and national awards for arts, features, and news stories, and has contributed to magazines and newspapers around the country. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. So what's happening in your part of the state that can reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your suggestions for Wisconsin Weekend. We're all ears. Go to ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.